opportunity to work on my own skills and be able to develop myself and do some more in-depth study. But at the other hand, it means I'm up here. I don't appreciate that always. So like our focus text and the title above says, we're going to talk about I Did It My Way. And I'm sure more than one of y'all are automatically thinking of the Frank Sinatra song, probably humming it in your heads. The whole point of that is that we can do things our way, or we can do things God's way. But we can also compromise and try to find ways around that. But I think what we'll find is that, like Billy said, partial obedience is no obedience. You know, I find it always interesting, looking at my son, Sean, and the interactions that I have with him, and I think, boy, this must be what my parents went through. And I have a whole new respect for them. There's a story my mom loves to tell me about when I was about 4 or 5, and we were camping up in Colorado and hiking along the trails, and they said, come on, Seth, let's go this way. And I said, no, I go this way. I taste chipmunks. So sometimes in life there is outright disobedience where we can pick a completely different path. But then there's other times where we try to compromise. Just the other day with Sean, I told him to go clean his room. And being the good boy that he is, he went there, but then got distracted. And next thing I know, he comes back and tells me, I fed the goats. That's great. I'm glad you did that, but that's not what I told you to do. Even good things can be disobedience. You know, and my dear wife is an amazing baker. I am not so much. And I have learned the difference between baking and cooking. In cooking, you know, my dad always told me, oh, yeah, recipes are guidelines. You know, you look at it and you go, okay, that's a good idea, but I'm going to add this and I'm going to add this and I'm going to add this. Well, you can't do that with baking. It comes out horribly, horribly wrong if you come out and say, I'm going to add a little bit more of this, a little bit less of this, and try to tweak it your own way. I'm a horrible baker. So we want to talk about compromise. Compromise is nothing new. It's a subject and a topic that has been around for a long time. I'll start in going back to the Garden of Eden in Genesis 3. Genesis 3, starting in verse 1. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Lord had made, and he said to the woman, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree in the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. For God knows that in the day you eat it, your eyes will be open, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Just with that one little word, you can change things. Has God indeed said? And he says, you'll not surely die. And it was at that moment that Eve rationalized her decision and said, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe there's a way around this. Maybe we can work this out. But we know the course of that. Take a look at the life of Solomon. King Solomon, blessed with superb wisdom. In 1 Kings 11, I think it really gives a highlight of some of the decisions that he made. First Kings 11 and verse 4. For it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart after other gods. His heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. A lot of times we let things in our life pull us away. We make choices to draw closer to things that are going to pull us away. The wisest man in the world still allowed himself to compromise what he knew was right. What about Uzzah? Uzzah is a pretty familiar character that we come across. The story of Uzzah is always an interesting one to me. And for a long time, I didn't understand what the big deal was. The story there in 2 Samuel chapter 6, verses 3 through 7 say, "So they set the ark of God on a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill, and Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drove the new cart. And they brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill, accompanying the ark of God, and Ahio went out before the ark. And David and all the house of Israel played music before the Lord on all kinds of instruments, of fir wood, on harps, on stringed instruments, on tambourines, on cisterns, on cymbals. And when they came to Nacon's threshing floor, Uzzah put out his hand to the ark of God and took hold of it, for the ox stumbled. Then the anger of the Lord was aroused against Uzzah, and God struck him there for his error, and he died there by the ark of God." Like I say, for a while I was confused about that. I was like, it seems like a bit of an overreaction. But the truth is, it's not. God set in place a plan. But even before that, they set up for failure. They set up for failure by not carrying the ark the way that God had intended for them to. It was well-intentioned of Uzzah. He saw the special ark of God that was stumbled, and he intended to stop it. He had great intentions, but was that obeying what God had said? No. What about King Jehoshaphat in 2 Chronicles 19 there. Let's start off in chapter 18. Chapter 18, verse 1. It's 1 Chronicles. That's not going to work. 2 Chronicles 18, verse 1. Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance. By marriage, he allied himself with Ahab. Ahab, who we know, was married to one of the greatest women of all time, right? Chapter 19, it then goes on. "Then Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, returned safely to his house in Jerusalem. And Jehu, the son of Hemani the seer, went out to meet him and said to King Jehoshaphat, 'Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Therefore, the wrath of the Lord is upon you. Nevertheless, good things are found in you, in that you have removed the wooden images from the land and have prepared your heart to seek God.'" I thought this was an interesting one. Jehoshaphat was a good man. He did a lot of good things. But he made poor choices in who he associated with and who he drew close to. He may have had good intentions. He may have said, you know what? I can have a good effect on Ahab. But that's not what happened. And take a look at Saul. In 1 Samuel 13, starting in verse 8. "Then he waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So Saul said, 'Bring a burnt offering and peace offering here to me.' And he offered the burnt offering. Now it happened, as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering, that Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him, that he might greet him. And Samuel said, 'What have you done?' Saul said, 'Well, when I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered together at Michmash, then I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore, I felt compelled and offered a burnt offering.' And Samuel said to Saul, 'You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you.'" It was a simple command. You think Saul didn't know how he was supposed to offer these sacrifices? He knew. It was clearly spelled out. It was very clearly who was supposed to do it, when they were supposed to do it. he had good intentions. He knew that they had to offer sacrifices before going into this. But that wasn't his place to do that. And so he went in with good intentions, but he didn't obey. And just like we read our focus text, 1 Samuel 15, just shortly after that, I'll tell you, this is one of my favorite passages. Growing up, this was one that my mom and dad had me memorize. I can't even tell you how many times we had to write out, "To obey is better than sacrifice," which is a good thing. And I think that's something that we all need to teach. I love this so much because I can see it so clearly, this conversation between them, between Samuel and Saul. And it's almost like having children. Then Samuel went to Saul in verse 13, and Saul said to him, "Blessed are you of the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord." And Samuel said, "Oh, really? What is that bleating of the sheep in my ears, the lowing of the oxen which I hear?" Saul said, "They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed." And Samuel said to Saul, "Be quiet, and I will tell you what the Lord said to me last night." And he said to him, "Speak on." So Samuel said, "When you were little, in your own eyes, were you not head of the tribes of Israel, and did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, 'Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed.' Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord?" And it goes on, like we said, culminating in Samuel saying that to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. I don't know how much clearer it gets than that. Obedience is not a gray area. There's no half-hearted obedience. It's obedience or disobedience. When we compromise, that's where things get not hairy, but when we compromise, we disobey. Now let's take a look at the words here. I thought it was interesting doing a word study. Obedience is technically doing what's commanded, but it has to do with the attitude. When you're obeying and looking at mere obedience, you're looking at a checklist mentality. You're looking at, okay, what can I do? What's the bare minimum? All right, yeah, I cleaned my room. I didn't touch the closet. That's not part of my room. However, submission is obedience in faith with the right attitude, understanding what the will of the Lord is for you. Not just, all right, yeah, I technically got that covered. Now, compromise, then, is when we try to insert our plans into God's will. And that's the problem. I thought it was so interesting. Naaman, in 2 Kings chapter 5, and then verse 11, Naaman had leprosy and was seeking to be healed from it, and was told to go see this man. So he goes and sees him. And then in verse 11, let's start in verse 10. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored to you, and you shall be clean." And Naaman became furious and went away and said, "Indeed, I said to myself, 'He will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. Are not the Abana, the Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?' So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spoke to him and said, 'My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, wash and be clean?' So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean." I like the ESV. I'm reading out of the New King James, but the ESV there in verse 11 says, "Behold, I thought." Well, there's your problem. His intentions and his ideas were not what God had told him. God clearly told him what was going to happen and what he needed to do to be clean. But he says, "Behold, I thought." Boy, we say that today, don't we? I thought. In looking at the word submit, it was pretty interesting. I'm not going to murder the Greek by trying to pronounce it. But it's broken up into two words. One meaning arranging and one meaning under. The whole concept means that it's to arrange underneath. And they actually used it in terms of the military. To arrange troops and arrange groups underneath one military commander. So that begs the question, are we arranging ourselves under the command of God? Surely we don't compromise today. That was just in the Old Testament. What about in worship? Do people compromise in worship? Do they try to insert their ideas as opposed to what God has commanded? Well, yeah, we see that all the time. What about spending the church's money to sponsor schools or fellowship halls? Are those good things? Yeah, those are good things. But is that what he has commanded for his money to be used for? No. That's not in his plan. And his wisdom shows that those are individual responsibilities, not the church's responsibility. What about music and worship? The New Testament says we're to sing. Are instruments beautiful sounding? Absolutely. I love listening to music, all kinds of music. But that's not what God's commanded for worship. How about attendance? Does that hit a little too close? Do we check off that we took the Lord's Supper and we're good for the week? We came, we shook some hands? Or are we seeking out opportunities to hear God's word, to study it, to teach it, to encourage one another? My attitude over the years has really changed. As a young man, you know, I remember waking up on Sunday morning and going to church, and then slowly it became more of a habit. And then now it's to a point that I really appreciate seeing you guys. Every day I get to come here is a blessing. And I hope you feel that way too. But it comes down to our attitude. What about in our friends? Do we ever compromise in our friends saying, "Well, I know they're rough around the edges. I know they're not the greatest person. But you know what? I bet I could have a good influence by hanging out with them." Well, yeah, usually the opposite is the case. Look at Jehoshaphat. He had a friend in Ahab, and it didn't turn out well for him. A lot of times we can start out thinking we're going to have a positive influence, but the opposite ends up happening. What about in everyday situations? Do we compromise then? What about drinking? Asking, what is strong drink? At what point are we drunk? Is that the right attitude? Or is that looking at it in a technically minded, seeking mere obedience versus submission? One I struggle with myself, what about the speed limit? We're to follow the rules of the land. Well, I know the speed limit says 70. But you know what? I know I won't get pulled over as long as I'm not going more than 5 to 10 over. It's food for thought. Let's talk about submission itself. You know, if we're honest with ourselves, we could come up with many, many ways that we try to compromise and we slip into little deviations from what is right. And that makes it wrong. You know, I love the analogy. John Fraser has used this before too, and my dad as well growing up. Picture a beautiful ice cream sundae. It's decked out, got 5 scoops of different flavors, all this whipped cream, cherries on top. Looks awesome. And then imagine somebody comes in with just a pinch of rat poop and puts it on there. That's a gross thing to think about, but at the same time you say, "Oh, well, you know what? It's just a pinch. Does it really ruin that whole thing?" Well, it would for me. But the point is that there's no gray area. A little rat poop is still a rat poop Sunday. Submission itself is commanded. Take a look at the book of James. James is an awesome book and one that I don't spend enough time in. But James chapter 4. James chapter 4 and verse 7. Therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. It's as simple as that. It's a command. Why submit? Because we're commanded. But really, it's more than that. It's so much more than that. God is a jealous God. Deuteronomy chapter 4. We know throughout the Old Testament that God talks to them about destroying all their other gods and getting rid of all of the idols that are within these lands that they're taking over. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 24 says, "The Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God." It means he doesn't want you serving anyone but him, and he deserves that. There's a movie that we watch a lot of times that I thought was pretty funny, called The Pacifier. And in that, a catchphrase that he uses a lot is, "My way, no highway option." And that's what God is telling us. It's his way. But really, a big reason to serve him and to submit to him is because he cares. Flip over to 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 6 and 7 says, "Therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time." But then it says this, "casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you." If that's not powerful, I don't know what is. And if that's not a God worth serving, then I don't know who is. So that begs the question then, are we seeking minimum qualifications or are we seeking obedience? If you ask, at what point does blank become sin, then you're already looking at it the wrong perspective. Looking at it the wrong way. You're not seeking submission. There's an encouragement to Thessalonica in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 that I thought was very fitting. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, we'll start in verse 15. The admonition there is for the Thessalonians to stand fast. "Therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold the traditions which you were taught, whether by word or our epistle." The point is that we know what's right. God has given us all things that pertain to life and godliness. We're not missing anything from the command. So then it's just our issue with following it. So we have to stand fast, to stand firm in what we know and what we believe. Secondly, we have to ask for God's help. 2 Thessalonians there, chapter 3, verse 3, same opening. "But the Lord is faithful, who will establish you and guard you from the evil one." And then verse 5, "Now may the Lord direct your hearts into the love of God and into the patience of Christ." God is guarding, protecting, guiding, and we need to make sure we are asking and seeking that help. Finally, don't grow weary. 2 Thessalonians 3:13, "But as for you, brethren, do not grow weary in doing good." We need to seek to do good things, but we also need to keep in mind what God's law is and that there is no highway option. You know, in fact, There's an idiom that we commonly say, that the highway to hell is paved with good intentions. Y'all heard that before? Yeah, it's a pretty common phrase. But I've been thinking about that one a lot. And you know, it makes me sad, to be honest. To do things so... to live a life that is so right, but then to think, I can do this. You know, that's not technically wrong. Well, is it? Is it what God has said? Because there's a clear line between obedience and disobedience. So I want to wrap up tonight and think and have y'all thinking about something. That title, I Did It My Way. Have you done things your way? Are you doing things your way? Or are you doing them God's way? There's no gray area. You can't sort of obey. You can't sort of do things God's way. Have you been living in outright disobedience? If you know God's desire for you, then you know what you need to do. There's a clear line between saved and condemned. Have you been trying to compromise by seeking mere obedience, minimum qualifications? Be honest with yourself. Are you really seeking submission to God? You know, and if you don't know God's plan for you, well, when we stand and sing, that's the opportunity for you to get with us, or even afterwards. We want you to help you understand what God's will is for you, what His plan is. Like Kevin talked about this morning, what is our purpose? So at this time, we offer the invitation, and it's not my invitation, it's the invitation of our Lord to join the body, to obey, but to submit to His will by being